Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Greek Godcast. It is a solo episode brought to you by yours truly, Dan the Man, the guy who never stumbles over his own words. What's up, everybody? First of all, happy Mother's Day to all you wonderful moms out there, and even you single dads who are having to play double duty in role of both parents. I hope all of you are having a fantastic day and getting to spend time with your little ones, your loved ones, and even though it's raining here, hopefully you guys are making the most of it. Before I go any further, I do want to say that Tyler sent me a text earlier. We were supposed to do a joint episode, and that didn't work out. Him and Haley are at the hospital. She's experiencing some symptoms similar to like what happened before when she spent a week in the hospital. So hopefully everything turns out okay. Just keep them in your thoughts and prayers. Just reach out to them. Just let them know that you're thinking about them. Hopefully everything turns out okay. I was talking to Tyler and I told him, you know, hey man, need anything, just let me and Mrs. Dan the Man know. We'll do anything that we can to help. Definitely praying for him that, you know, everything turns out okay. Okay, so, moving on, today's episode is hopefully the start of something really cool. This is something I've been wanting to do for a little while. I've talked about it a few times, I think, in past episodes with Tyler, and I've talked about it a few times in dialogue with Tyler, like on phone calls and stuff like that, when we would just, you know, call and chit-chat. You know, see how we're doing and talk about the show and that kind of thing. So I'm wanting to do a series of solo episodes where I talk about comic books, specifically DC Comics. And I'm going to kind of roll out like the plan here. So this is step one, which is the introduction to what I'm doing. Why I'm doing DC. I feel like personally Marvel gets enough exposure. I am a huge fan of DC and Marvel and also Image and Dark Horse. Those are the four. No, there's a fifth one, IDW. Those are the five titles or companies that publish comic books that I keep up with. Those are not the only five comic book companies. There are more, and I'm sure they put out great work as well, but these are the five that I keep up with. So DC does, as you know, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Justice League, that kind of thing. You know Marvel because you know the MCU. Disney's done a really good job of handling that property. Marvel also, because Disney also owns Star Wars, they also do Star Wars comics as well. So Marvel kind of has like two universes going on, completely separate of each other, that are being handled very well comic-wise. So you've got, you know, the Avengers, you've got Captain America and Thor and the X-Men and Spider-Man, Fantastic Four and all that stuff, those properties. And then, like I said, they also have Star Wars. And then you have IDW, the fifth one that I mentioned a minute ago. They do comics for things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They do Transformers. In fact, I read a run of Transformer comics called More Than Meets the Eye, and that was like one of the best comic book runs that I've read in a really long time. It was super amazing. It actually focused more on like the more obscure characters from the Transformers series, and it was so good. It had such good character development. But anyway, I digress. It handles a lot of the franchises that you've seen in like cartoons, like Saturday morning cartoons. And then there's Image Comics, which is owned by Todd McFarlane, who used to work for Marvel and drew for Spider-Man. He helped create Venom. Actually, I think he created Venom. My history might be skewed on that. I don't remember exactly. If that's right or not. He is the first person to draw Venom, and he drew some of the most iconic Spider-Man art ever. Well, he broke away from Marvel and he started his own company, and he created Spawn, and he's got like a whole litany of titles under Image Comics. In fact, one of them is actually a show on Amazon Prime right now called Invincible, and it's a really successful company. I love Image Comics. I wish I knew more about their whole lineup and mythos of characters, but Image, while I do love Spawn and love Image and just love everything that Todd McFarlane's done, and the fact that, you know, he's so able to put like what he wants out there without like the constraints of like higher ups and things like that. Unfortunately, it's just not something I'm very well versed in, which is another reason why I'm not focusing on Image and I'm focusing on DC. I mentioned a minute ago, you know, Star Wars is under Marvel and it's a separate thing from the Marvel characters. I could focus on that instead of DC, but I'm not going to, because I just don't want to right now. Like, there's not that many titles, but there is a lot in there to cover, and it's more than just comics with Star Wars. Like, there's also the movies, there's the shows, there's the books, and Star Wars is like, they do it to where everything is connected in continuity. So it's a lot more difficult to cover. Whereas DC, like, I'm just covering the comic books. Like, the movies have nothing to do with it. Like, you know stuff from the Marvel comics from the MCU, but the movies have nothing to do with the comics. The comics is the source material that the movies are being influenced by. The MCU is an interesting combination of original, fresh ideas that in a lot of ways are being based off of pre-established stories that were run in the comics. And then the other title or franchise I mentioned, Dark Horse, they were actually the ones, before Disney bought Star Wars, they actually did Star Wars comics. They do a lot of comic book runs. Notably, their most popular ones include Hellboy, the Predator comics, the Alien comics, the Mask. You remember Jim Carrey's The Mask, how goofy it was? It's actually like a much darker like franchise than you realize, and Dark Horse has that property. He is still like the zany character that you remember Jim Carrey portraying him as, but it's more to it than what the movie like put out there. And like, you know, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. Dark Horse has like a whole ton of stuff, and Dark Horse is pretty cool, but like all of them, Marvel included, aside from DC, like have just bits and pieces that I'm interested in. I could cover Marvel in a series like I'm going to do with DC and be just as invested, because I love Marvel. I am, you know, it's funny. I was talking to some relatives last night, because I live in South Arkansas. Naturally, I'm a Razorback fan, but like I'm the black sheep of Razorback fans, because I also like LSU, and I'm not afraid to say that. Believe it or not, you can like more than one team. You can actually like the rival. It's okay. And they were like, how can you say that? This is blasphemy. And I actually brought up Marvel and DC as an example. I was like, well, you know, you've got Marvel fanboys who are like, well, Marvel is king and DC is trash. And then you've got people who are DC fanboys who say the exact same thing. But at the end of the day, you know, they both have their pros and cons to them. And, like, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I mean, it's okay to like both of them. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. Like, LSU is not that bad of a team, and Marvel's not that bad of a comic book run, and neither is DC, and neither are the Razorbacks, especially after their last season. Like, thank God for Sam Pittman, we actually have a team we can be proud of again, thank God. Which, just so you know, like, the whole notion of having another team to cheer for, I got the idea of having a quote-unquote backup team from my brother-in-law, who is a huge Razorback fan. And he started cheering for the Clemson Tigers just because we were doing so bad for so long that he wanted to have a second team that he could cheer for that would actually win. And so I just chose the better Tiger team. That's just my opinion. So anyway, enough of all that. I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for that. That's fine. I'm okay. If you're offended by, it's like we say all the time, if you're offended by anything we say on the show, share it with five of your friends to make sure that it really was something to be offended by so that they can listen to it too. And, you know, you can figure it out that way. But anyway, my thing is like DC, like outside of the comic books, just like hasn't really been handled well. The movies are a mess. They had a really good thing with, like, the DCAU, which not a lot of people know about, like they should. When DC relaunched in 2011 with the New 52, which I'll explain what that means later on in this series, they also simultaneously launched a series of movies called the DCAU, which is, like, Disney's Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's DC's animated films. They're all a little over an hour long, and they're all really good, and they're all connected. There's a continuity, and it's the exact same formula as the MCU, but they're animated, and they're all like PG-13. The last couple of them, there's a few of them that are rated R for good reason. The very last one, Apocalypse War, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. Man, it's got, like, some of the goriest deaths in it. Like, not to, like, you know, do spoilers or anything, but, like, there's a reason it's got that R rating on there. But it's got some really amazing storytelling. But the problem is people associate cartoons with kid things. And that's just not true. That's simply not true. Like, cartoons are for all ages. It's just another form of media. If people got that stigmatism out of the way, we probably wouldn't have such a hold up on getting the movies that we want from our comic book stories, because it is just easier to animate, whether it's traditional animation, CGI, whatever. It is easier to put what you want in your vision in the form of animation than trying to get all these actors and get all these sets and get all this crazy budget and stuff like that. It's just easier just to animate it. But everyone, typically people think, oh, it's for kids, and so it just doesn't do the same. Which one looks better? Well, obviously live action, but you know, I don't know. Personally, I think the animated route would be just better because there's so much storytelling to do. So, but that's just me. I'm kind of rambling here, which that's par for the course on this show. But yeah, like, MCU, Marvel's been handled so well, like, you know, I don't really feel like a need to cover it. Like, you know the gist of the characters, you know, maybe if there's enough support behind this, maybe I'll branch off and do more episodes where I do cover Marvel down the road, but for now, I want to cover DC. Aside from the fact that I feel like DC hasn't been handled well and people really truly don't know a whole lot about DC. The other reason that I want to do it is because I just recently got reinvested in reading DC comics. And that is because of Zack Snyder's Justice League movie on HBO Max. That was such a good movie. It made me go, man, I really miss reading DC comics. I miss reading comic books in general. I'm going to start reading DC comics again. So I signed up for DC Universe Infinite, and it is like $8 a month. And if you are interested in reading comic books, it is 1,000% worth it. It really is. It's such a good app. So now that I've kind of like established why I want to do this, now we go into the next part, which is going to be the rest of this episode. I'm going to spend the next few episodes, like, talking about characters, okay? Just talking about a few different characters, who they are, when they first appear, kind of what they're about. Just give you like a quick little rundown. I'm going to be focusing on like members of the Justice League, first off, and then I'll do like a few other characters, and then the rest of my episodes are going to be covering issue per issue of comic book series that I'm going to be reading. I'm going to be like, hey, here's Batman number one from 2011, New 52. Here's what happened in the issue. Here's Detective Comics, and so on and so forth. And just cover them. And just tell you what they're about, tell you what happened, kind of go into some exposition, and just give you a rundown of what's going on. And the idea behind it is to educate you about the characters, to educate you on what's going on in the comics, and honestly, just to have something cool to talk about. So, yeah. Hopefully this turns out well, and like I said, if it gets enough support, maybe I will do Marvel. Maybe I will do Image. Maybe I will do Dark Horse. Maybe I will do IDW. I don't know. We'll see. Right now, for the foreseeable future, it's just going to be DC. So, let's get into it. Character introduction. For the rest of the episode, I'm just going to talk about what's formerly known as the Trinity. And that is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Now, I know you know who these three are. That's why they're called the Trinity. They're the three biggest names in DC Comics. Everybody knows Batman. Everybody knows Superman. Everybody knows Wonder Woman. In as far as movies go, Batman, like, always has a movie. Batman always sells. I wish that it was the same for Superman, and I wish it was the same for Wonder Woman. It's honestly a shame that we have not gotten a Wonder Woman movie until a few years ago. I still haven't watched it yet because I'm gonna watch it with my wife. I got the Wonder Woman 1984 movie, and it looks pretty cool. I'm excited to check it out. I'm a big fan of Henry Cavill's Superman. I did like the Zack Snyder stuff, but I just like Superman in general, and I feel like there should be more Superman stuff out there. Like, we have Batman everything, but we don't really have enough Superman to cover really, like, the whole Superman mythos. Like, people know Lex Luthor, and they know General Zod, and that's really about it. And I'm just going off the assumption you know who those people are, because I'm talking to the casual listeners. But I digress. I'm rambling again. You know the deal. Let me get into the first one, which is Batman. So, Batman, first off, as you know, his real name is Bruce Wayne. Batman was first introduced in Detective Comics, issue number 27, in 1939. And he was created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. Okay? Batman, his real name is Bruce Wayne, and he is the son of Thomas and Martha Wayne. Thomas was a doctor, and Martha was his wife, and Bruce was their child. They're a very wealthy family. They're what's referred to as Gothamites, which is to say, like, they live in Gotham. They're in the upper class. They're from Gotham City, right? Which I don't know what Gotham City is supposed to be in terms of real world. Like, DC is a little different from Marvel, because Marvel, like, I think Marvel has, like, made-up cities, but, like, they tend to do more real-world cities in their American side of comics than DC does. So, I guess, I don't know, I guess Gotham would be, like, the DC version of New York? I'm assuming. I could be totally wrong about that. I don't know. But Gotham is a city that... it's massive. It's got like 9 million people in its populace. And it's a city in decline. Crime rates, you know, really bad. There's a lot of corruption in politics. The police force can't really keep up. You know, crime families, you know, get their way a lot. Thomas and Martha Wayne were people who wanted to try to help make the city better. They wanted to use their money and their resources to reinvest in the city and make it a place where people want to live and not a place where people have to live. You know, like, you know, there's a difference between wanting to live somewhere and, like, you not having any other choice, right? And so that's kind of like the state that Gotham's in. People are there because they're rich and they can afford a comfortable lifestyle, so therefore they want to live there. They can make it whatever life they want to be. And then there's people who are in the middle and lower class who are just, like, stuck there, right? Like, they don't really have, like, options like the upper class do. Now, that being said, how Bruce Wayne becomes Batman is a very well-established story of tragedy. When Bruce was a child, I think he was, like, 8 years old, his father and mother took him to see the Mark of Zorro at the Monarch Theater, movie theater. And after the movie concluded, like, for whatever reason, it's always changed, like, over the years in, like, different reboots and origins and movies and things like that. For whatever reason, they go down an alley, crime alley, is what it ends up being called, if I'm not mistaken. And they're met by Mugger. Who later on in storytelling you learn is named Joe Chill. And Joe Chill mugs him. And the mugging goes wrong. He murders, or maybe it goes right. I don't really remember what the motives of Joe Chill were, other than mugging them. But he shoots Thomas, and he shoots Martha, kills them both in front of Bruce, snatches a pearl necklace off Martha, takes whatever money he can, and he runs. And all of a sudden, boom, Bruce Wayne is the richest orphan ever. And so, he's like this 8-year-old boy who's just become super traumatized. And in dealing with that trauma and grief, he, you know, when we're experienced with something like that, everybody handles, like, trauma and grief differently, right? So, their butler... of course, they're literally so rich, they have a butler. His name is Alfred Pennyworth. And he's this really nice guy. He's an English gentleman. He ends up becoming Bruce's parental guardian. So he's his butler, but, like, he's not really a butler anymore. People will kind of make the joke, like, oh, Batman has a butler. Yeah, that's his job, but truthfully, he doesn't do it because he's paid to be a butler. He does it because he loves Bruce. Like, Alfred becomes Bruce's surrogate father from this point on. He fills a role that is gone now. And so with Alfred taking care of him, he kind of lets Bruce, you know, do what he feels like he needs to do in dealing with this grief and this trauma of losing his parents, having seen them murdered firsthand. So he... hey, guys, I'm sorry. Hold on just 1 second. I'm going to have to put the mic down for, like, just a second. You know the deal. There is no formula. Hold on a sec. Okay, sorry about that. Had to take a short second to be a parent there. Sorry about that. Now I'm back to being a podcaster. You know the deal. We have families. There is no recording studio. God in heaven, I wish we had a recording studio where I didn't have to be interrupted. But it is what it is. You guys know. So anyway... Bruce deals with his grief from a young age by learning. He immerses himself in knowledge. He studies forensics. He studies how to... Basically learns how to be a detective. He invests in education. Now, he does have, like, a normal life, per se. Like, he goes to school. And you know, he gets, you know, he graduates high school, and I don't know if he actually goes to college or not, but I do know he like had a normal school life. And he spent his time though learning how to become a detective. And when he became a young man, he left Gotham. He went and traveled the world to continue to learn. He wanted to put himself through like the most extreme scenarios. He wanted to learn how to overcome overwhelming odds. He went to learn to fight. It wasn't just learning how to fight. You know, he could have done that in the States. He went and learned like as many forms of martial arts, if not all of them, because it's comic books, right? That he could possibly learn. He learned how to face death and overcome it. You know, he learned how to escape impossible scenarios. He learned how to fight multiple people at once. He learned how to be as fast as humanly possible, as a normal man can. Because Batman's a normal guy. Bruce is just a normal dude. He wanted to be the best a normal person could possibly be. But ultimately, the thing that stands out as far as like what Batman knows in terms of like martial arts, Batman knows stealth. Batman is actually a ninja. He is a legitimate ninja. Like, that's one of the things he learned was stealth and ninjutsu and, you know, depending on which form of canon that you read or whatever, like, you know, it talks about Batman knows this and Batman knows that. Like, but Batman's a ninja. Like, that's what it boils down to. He's a detective ninja. But that's a ridiculous title name. Batman sounds cooler. Like, I don't know. I probably would read a comic called Detective Ninja, if I'm being honest. But, I mean, that's me. But the point is once Bruce reached this point in his life where he felt ready, you know, he comes back to Gotham. And his father was a doctor, but his father also had like a company, had like a family fortune, and it was called Wayne Enterprises. Bruce came in, and he took over as CEO because it is his company. He inherited it from his father, and so that's where his money comes in, and so he has the means to fund his plan. Now, I need you to understand, all this that he's done so far is how he is dealing with the grief and trauma of seeing his parents murdered in front of him, okay? He has it in his mind that he is going to prevent anybody else from going through what he went through as an 8-year-old boy. He is going to fight crime. That is what he wants to do. He doesn't know how he's going to do it yet. Well, time goes on, and he gets inspiration. It's kind of like a trial and error for him before he actually becomes Batman, right? He puts on a mask, puts on some black clothes, and goes out at night, and he's just, like, literally looking for trouble. One really good story done by Frank Miller is called Batman Year One. And that actually, like, covers this time period that I'm talking about. And there's actually a movie adaptation of it. It's an animated movie. Don't judge it. You should check it out. It's really good. The comic book is really awesome. If you're a reader, again, it's something you can read on the DC Universe Infinite app. I highly suggest checking it out. It's really good. He eventually like gets the inspiration to become Batman, like to make his clothing that he wears at night, Batman. And he finds out that there's, or maybe he already knew. I can't, again, like depending on which point in time the series goes on, or what canon continuity you're looking at or whatever. He knows there's a cave underneath his mansion, Wayne Manor. And so he makes his base of operations down there in the Batcave. It's literally a Batcave. It's full of bats. And so he sets up all this expensive equipment down there and sets up this whole network. And yeah, he wears this suit. He's dressed like a bat. He goes out at night and he fights criminals because, and it's not like there's a shortage of crime either. Like, it's not like there's nights that he goes out and he's like, oh, this is so boring. I feel stupid. I'm dressed like a bat and there's no crime. Like, Gotham is one of those cities where there is crime happening, like, literally all the time. Like, if Batman didn't sleep, he could probably be Batman 24/7. Like, honestly. That is the gist of Batman. He goes out and he fights crime. I'm not going to go any further because there's a lot to cover with Batman. But that's the gist of Batman. Now, he was not the original staple in comic book history. He came out in 1939. The guy that came out in 1938 is the one that is hailed as the original superhero. And I'm going to be talking about, of course, next, Superman. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel, came out in Action Comics number 1 in 1938. Has the iconic cover of Superman lifting a car over his head, right? So, like, when it comes to superheroes, like, he's, like, the OG superhero. Like, it doesn't matter what character you make, if you make it into the comic industry, 9 times out of 10 in some form or fashion, you're gonna have somebody that's based off Superman. Like, and that includes every comic book company, including DC. He's just one of the best, if not the best hero, like, of all time. So Superman, his backstory is he's not human. He's an alien, right? He's called a Kryptonian. His real name is Kal-El, K-A-L-E-L, and he's from a planet called Krypton. And he's the son of Jor-El and Lara, from the House of El, right? And Jor-El sent Kal-El in a rocket from Krypton to Earth, to live on Earth, because Krypton was dying. Jor-El was the only... Again, this is one of those things where it's like the Batman mythos. It's kind of changed from writer to writer, continuity to continuity, because, like, these guys have been around... have been, like, 80 years, you know what I'm saying, like, 80 years, in comics, and so it's just changed a little bit here and there, but basically, like, Jor-El knew that Krypton was going to die, and, like, the higher-ups, the government of leaders of Krypton, you know, just thought Jor-El was crazy, and he didn't know what he was talking about, but Jor-El was a incredibly intelligent being, and he knew the planet was going to explode. But he didn't have a lot of time, and so while he couldn't make a craft where they could all escape, he knew he could make a craft where he could send his son away to be safe. And he searched the stars, he found Earth, and he knew what kind of life or what kind of being his son was going to be. Kryptonians, their physiology is affected by solar radiation. Krypton was under a red sun, which a red sun is a star that's in, like, its final life cycle, right? Like, ours is a yellow sun. It's like middle-aged, basically. Kryptonians under yellow sunlight, they suddenly become, they develop powers, and they can do things that they normally couldn't do before. Kryptonians under red solar radiation, they're, for all intents and purposes, regular people just like you and me. So he knew that, you know, he was going to be, you know, an extraordinary being on this world. And sometimes when I think about that, I kind of think it was like a preservation tactic. Like, he wasn't entirely sure, like, what was going to happen, but he knew that it would give him abilities that would keep him protected, you know? And I kind of think that was one of the reasons why he chose Earth. He had observed Earth a little bit and kind of knew that they were underdeveloped in comparison to Krypton. But he was just, man, he was just hoping for the best because he just didn't have time. He was just trying to make sure his kid was going to live. And he did. The ship crash landed in Smallville, Kansas. And a small pickup truck saw the crash landing. And it was a couple, Jonathan and Martha Kent, who found a little baby in a spaceship. And doing the responsible thing, they hid the spaceship, didn't report it to the government, and just raised him as his own. Totally the same thing to do. I would have done it. Actually, I probably would have done it. I'd be like, yes, space baby. Let's see what happens. Nothing can go wrong here. And they raised him. They didn't know his name was Kal-El. They didn't know he was from Krypton. They just knew that he wasn't from Earth. They knew he looked like a human. And so they raised him like one of their own. They named him Clark Kent. When Clark was a young child, maybe even early teen, he began to develop his powers. So he was a normal kid, like, during his childhood years. But then, like, because of the exposure to solar radiation, he started to develop powers. So, Superman has the following abilities. He has supervision. That means he can see insane amount of distances. We're talking hundreds of miles he can see. He can hear, like, all over the earth. Like, his super hearing is insane. He has a base of operations just like Batman does. You know, Batman's got the Batcave. Superman has the Fortress of Solitude, which is, I think it's in Antarctica. It's somewhere really snowy. I think it's the South Pole. I don't think it's the North Pole. But anyway, if anybody were to break in, like, I don't know how you would, but if anybody were to break into the Fortress of Solitude, Superman is so attuned to the sounds there, he would know. Like, you know, he does end up having a love interest with Lois Lane. He's so attuned to her heartbeat, he can hear it anywhere. Like, it's comic book stuff, right? But he has super hearing, okay? He has super strength, which has been, like, varied. Again, based off writers and continuity and things like that. There was a time period where Superman was literally unlimited in strength. And then, like, DC, like, kind of, like, toned him down and limited a little bit. And there was, like, some backlash over it. But yeah, I'll get into that later. Super speed. Superman is not the same kind of speedster as the Flash, which is another character that I'll cover later on. The Flash can tap into something called the Speed Force, which, again, is something I'll talk about later. Superman does not tap into the Speed Force. He's just that fast. But he can, while he is not as fast as the Flash, he can keep up with the Flash in a lot of ways. He's a really fast dude. Like, he can get anywhere in the world in any amount of time. He's quick, okay? He can fly. He is invulnerable. I've literally seen comics and stories where Superman has survived nuclear explosions. Superman is powerful. There's one thing where it's called DC 1 Million, where it's like in, like, I forget the exact number century, but it's like the 852nd or 53rd century in the future, and, like, this Superman is still alive. Like, I guess he became immortal because he absorbed so much solar energy, but, like, he lived on the sun, like, for an untold amount of time. Like, he basically just became a god. He's in super invulnerable. Like, you can't hurt him. One of the things that I liked in the movie Superman Returns, which that movie was, it was okay, was when this dude shot a bullet and, like, it hit Superman in the eye and it just bent on his eye. That was, like, probably the best visual illustration of how invulnerable Superman is. Speaking of his eye, he can shoot lasers from his eye, his heat vision, but he can also see through things. He has X-ray vision. And he can breathe freezing cold breath. Like, he can freeze things solid ice with his breath if he chooses to. You know how when you go, and it's like, it's hot, but then you can go like that, and it's cool. It's like that. Like, but he doesn't have hot breath. He has heat vision. He has hot eyes and cold breath. So he left Smallville when he grew up, and he moved to Metropolis as Clark Kent, and he wanted to get a job as a reporter. He works at the Daily Planet in Metropolis, and he eventually just, you know, he wanted to do the right thing, and so he kind of started leading this double life where he was Clark Kent and Superman. And so, you know, when there was danger, he'd be Superman, and he'd protect the city, and sometimes the Earth, and so on and so forth. And that's basically, in a nutshell, Superman. There's a lot more to Superman than what I just said. Just like there's way more to Batman than what I just said. But Superman's origins are a lot simpler than Batman's. There have been origin stories where Superman parents died at one point in his life, or his surrogate father Jonathan died. There's been times when they were both alive. It's just really been all about what story, what continuity, what writer is talking about at the time. But generally, they're both alive. He does have his parents. Superman is a pretty awesome character. I love Superman. In terms of which stories I like more between Superman and Batman, it's going to be Batman. Batman's just the grittier one of the two. But that doesn't mean I don't love a good Superman story. Superman's going to be something that I'll be covering in this whole, you know, comic book by comic book coverage series that I'm going to be doing. Now, last but not least, probably my all-time favorite female superhero, Wonder Woman, hands down. But interestingly, I don't really know a lot about her stories. Like, because when I was a comic book reader in my early adulthood, like, I didn't have apps on a phone. I had a flip phone, so, you know, I didn't get very many opportunities to read comics online. And I didn't get very much access to comic book stores, so I didn't have just like a lot of money, so I would just buy what I could, and I'd buy these crossover events, right? Or I'd buy like, you know, Batman stuff, because I'm a big Batman fan. Or I would just read off my brother's comic book collection, because he was a big deal, but he didn't buy a lot of Wonder Woman stuff, so I don't really know a whole lot about Wonder Woman's like story arcs and things like that of her line of comics. And that's one that I'm excited about, because I will be reading Wonder Woman comics, and I will be sharing those stories with you, and I'm really excited about that. But I do know enough about Wonder Woman to know, dude, she is, like, yes, like, one of the best superheroes ever, and absolutely deserves to be included in the Trinity of Superheroes, okay? So Wonder Woman made her first appearance in All-Star Comics in issue number 8 in 1941. And she was co-created by William Moulton Marston and H.G. Peter. Now, while you have in Marvel Comics a lot of their storytelling, especially with Thor, rooted in Norse mythology, DC pulls a lot of their stuff from Greek mythology, and that's where Wonder Woman actually comes from. She is an Amazon, which that's like a real thing in Greek mythology. The Amazons were like a real thing. She's from the island of Themyscira, which is also known as Paradise Island, and that's the home of the Amazons. They're a race of all-female warriors. So if you're, you know, a Marvel fan and you know about the Norse stuff that they reference, you know, then just think of Valkyries. It's like similar to Valkyries, all female warriors, but you know, it's They're not Valkyries. They're Amazons. They function differently than Valkyries did, but similar to that, okay? The origins, again, like Superman and Batman with Wonder Woman have changed over the years with continuity and writers and reboots and blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, Wonder Woman, whose real name is Diana Prince, she is the ambassador of Paradise Island in Man's World. That's what they refer to the rest of Earth. They refer to it as Man's World, even though, like, there's clearly both men and women in it. Like, they call it Man's World, which, that's fair. They sent her out as an ambassador, for different reasons. I don't really know what all the reasons are. But yeah, she ultimately goes out and she decides she wants to help make this world a better place. Just like Superman and Batman. She wants to do things for a greater good. I don't know if she actually like has like a hometown that she resides in, or if she just travels the world. That part I don't really know. I'm assuming she's got like a hometown that she stays in. You know how like, you know, the Flash has Central City, and Batman has Gotham City, and Superman has Metropolis. Green Lantern has Coast City. You know, that kind of stuff. I don't know if she just travels the world. I don't know. But, you know, she does go out and fight evil. You know, she tries to protect the world, okay? And tries to make it a better place. She has a litany of... Litany? She has a lot of powers. She's got these gauntlets that she wears on her arms that are unbreakable, and she uses them as like shields. And it's been like, I guess it's been up to the writer on whether or not she's invulnerable. Because in some comics, she's just as invulnerable as Superman. And then there's other times in comics where she's literally been shot like by a normal gun, and like, you know, she almost died. So I don't know, man. Like, there's kind of like some confusion there on that. But I think she is invulnerable, like Superman. She has a lasso that compels people to tell the truth. She has super strength. And she can fly, which she used to... I don't know, man. I don't think she's always been able to fly. Because, like, she had an invisible jet, which I don't know why. I remember the Super Friends show and she had the invisible jet or whatever. I was just like, okay, I mean, I can see you flying in the, I just like you're sitting, but it's whatever. The comics have done some silly things over the years. She has, you know, her outfit has changed over time to being like almost like a one piece swimsuit, to being like, tube top and a skirt, you know, like it's changed, and I'm being kind of funny with how I'm explaining her outfit, but ultimately what they do with it is they make it to where she's wearing armor. She's not wearing some skimpy outfit. She is wearing armor. In New 52, it's the one piece swimsuit looking deal, but they finally change it up to where like she's wearing like a traditional Greek skirt. She's wearing armor. She has a shield. She has a sword. She has a cape. She looks like totally awesome. Like, you know, like she could like take on the whole world. Like, she looks cool. That's my favorite version of Wonder Woman. It's not like some design that's just, you know, to make it look like some hot chick superhero. Where, you know, you look at her boobs and butt and you go, oh, wow, I like that superhero. Like, no, like, they actually make her look like a legitimate, like, cool female superhero that everybody can look up to and, like, not, like, try to, like, sexualize it or whatever. So there have been times when, like, Wonder Woman was designed, And you know what the artist was going for. But, like, ultimately, like, they do go with, like, this really cool, like, blend of, like, classic and modern and Greek influences in her design. And it's really awesome. And that's my favorite rendition of Wonder Woman. Now, I didn't know this. I was taking some notes on these three. On you know, who they are, when they started, you know, who created them, when their first issue came out, and stuff like that. Apparently, there were some forgotten abilities Wonder Woman had that I've never seen in comics. But I mean, I've always read, like, modern stuff. But, like, apparently, at one point in time, she could communicate with animals. She could regenerate, like, if she got injured, you know, because, again, it was, like, back and forth on whether or not she was actually invulnerable. But if she, like, you know, was injured, she could just, you know, regenerate. If it was, like, really bad, she could just, like, merge with the earth and use the earth to regenerate her body, which makes sense, and I'll explain why in a minute. and then she could be resistant to extreme temperatures, and which that one actually still kind of holds up because of the whole, most of the time she is invulnerable, depending on who. Usually, most of the time when someone's writing it, she's invulnerable. So that one still holds up. She could do astral projection, teleport. like I said, those were the list of the forgotten powers. Her actual origin, though, has changed. Originally, like when I say her origin, like her conception on Paradise Island. So originally she was not like a natural born child. She was sculpted, from clay by Queen Hippolyta. I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. That is a real name in Greek mythology, by the way. So I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong. And she was given life. Okay. And that's why she is the way that she is. All Amazons are warriors, and they're immortal, and they're very strong, and they're very capable, but none of them are Wonder Woman. Like, Wonder Woman is, like, cut from a different cloth, okay? But they've changed it over the years with these rewrites and reboots and continuity changes and things like that. And now the standing origin of Wonder Woman is she's actually the love child of Queen Hippolyta and Zeus. That would make her a demigod, and more a reasonable explanation for her immortality and her abilities, and it would also make her a sibling of other demigods like Hercules, for example. And yeah, that's Wonder Woman. And so, yeah, that's the Trinity. And in comics, it's shown them all at times at odds with each other. But for the most part, it has shown them to be the three closest friends in DC. Like, these are the three that have each other's back no matter what. Wonder Woman will always be there for Batman. Wonder Woman will always be there for Superman. Bruce and Clark, out of all of the superheroes in DC, are the closest best friends ever. Like, as much as I love the Injustice storyline, which I might talk about that sometime, I kind of hate it because it's tragic. It's so tragic because, you know how close a friend that Bruce and Clark are. Like, they love each other as if they were brothers. They have put them at times where they would fight each other, but usually the whole real reason behind doing stuff like that is just to drive up comic book sales. People love a good Batman Superman fight because everyone's like, oh, well, Batman would win because Krypton, because Kryptonite, because Superman is, you know, he can be hurt by magic or whatever, or Batman's just a dude. Superman could just laser him in the face, you know, stuff like that or whatever. And some people like to see them fight and things like that. But the truth is, like, they're best friends. And the two feel the same about Wonder Woman. Like, they love her. Like, you know, in some storytelling, in variations like that, there have been times when, like in New 52, like I said, that was a reboot. Superman and Wonder Woman actually dated for a little bit in the cartoon Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, it was really hinted at that Wonder Woman, like, was actually, like, crushing on pretty hard, or maybe even loved Batman. And, you know, Batman's all brooding all the time, but, like, he low-key felt the same way. Instead of, like, the traditional love interests of, like, Lois Lane and Catwoman and things like that. Or Wonder Woman, you know, having Steve Trevor or whatever. But all that aside, like, they're the best of friends. They're the core of DC. They are the Trinity. They are the heart of the Justice League. And they are the heart of DC Comics. And they are my three favorite all-time superheroes from DC. I love a lot of superheroes from DC, but those are my three favorites. Those are the ones that I'm going to look to the most. And so with that being said, I know this episode was really wordy. Unlock my phone. This one we went 55 minutes. I will be doing more episodes. I'm not sure which characters I'm going to cover next, but I am going to be covering three more characters. I'm going to be covering everyone from, like, the main, most well-known roster of Justice League. Just like, as, like, an icebreaker. And I don't know how many episodes it's going to be. Maybe, like, one or two more episodes, you know, depending on how many characters I do from that main roster. But I'm going to cover people. And then, after that, when I do my final episode of covering characters, I'll give you my announcements of what comic series that I'm going to be reading through and covering issue by issue, and then we'll start getting shorter episodes where there will probably be like anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes where I'm talking about an individual comic book issue and talking about what happens and things like that. And yeah, I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to be really good for the show. I think it's going to be really great content. And yeah, and you know, and hopefully here in a couple weeks, me and Tyler get together. We can be stupid like we always are. But anyway, if you guys enjoyed the episode, you know, please leave some feedback. I really appreciate it. Share it with your friends, tell me what they think, and yeah, you guys have a great day, and be sure to keep Tyler and Haley in your prayers as well. Hopefully everything's good. So yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Peace.